Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hey, and welcome to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm Dirk, I'm your host, and we are approaching weekend 29 already in July. It is nice out. We had just a wonderful summer this year. I hope you enjoy lakes, country, and all it has to offer. Thanks for tuning in. Our daily updated schedule shares with you events and destinations, road trips, all kinds of things at lakelifeweekend.com. Stay tuned for an interview with Charlie Kavanaugh. He is a multi-generation bank owner in Perm, which I thought was a really interesting story to share. So we had him come over into our studio here, and you will hear that shortly. Please also let us know what you think, what you have for us to share. Email us to hello@lakelifeweekend.com with your feedback. We really appreciate you tuning in so regularly and using our website. It has been growing steadily. It's amazing and it's fun. Send us pictures, anything you want to share. We are working currently on a community page, which is in its development phase. So there's more to come, hopefully soon. Check out lakelifeweekend.com. Stay tuned. I don't want to keep this any longer for our interview. Enjoy, Charlie. Have a great weekend ahead. Hello to our interview part. I'm here with Charlie Kavanaugh of United Community Bank in Perm. Hey, Charlie.
Good morning, Dirk. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming on a beautiful summer day. I actually met you for the very first time when we opened our shop here, and you came from across the street, introduced yourself. That's when I met you almost a year ago. I at that point didn't really understand that you actually own a bank with your family. I thought it was just another bank. I have actually a banking background, so I'm kind of fascinated and thrilled that there's still small family-owned banks in America, quite a few. In Germany, I think we don't have that anymore, really. So I thought it would be interesting to learn about the history of your bank and how it all got started. But before we start with the beginning, maybe we learn a little bit about you. You are a Perm native. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and your life in Perm?
Well, that's correct. I grew up in Perm basically all my life, 4 or 5 years in Grand Forks where I went to college, but grew up in Perm when the town was a lot smaller, but it still has a lot of the small town flavor in terms of the businesses we have on Main Street, which were vibrant back then given the times, and they're actually all doing very well. Today we get an empty building and it seems like it fills up rather quickly with another business. Over the years, Perm's been very entrepreneurial, and that's obviously been good for the bank and good for the community as a whole.
No, yeah, I agree, and I really enjoy Perm. I'm a new resident, I would say. I just discovered this place and I enjoy it.
Actually, your business is a prime example of that. That the building, the old Motz and Greif building here, which you've done a really nice job of fixing up and got a great theme in here. But it was vacant for a bit, and you came in and added a very valuable asset to the community, and we appreciate that.
Thank you. So when you grew up in Perm, let's. Talk about that a little bit, because I also interviewed once Kevin Ketters from Ketters Meat Market, and he's from Frazee, and he said when he went to school, Frazee and Perm were pretty much the same size. I don't know if that was in the 70s maybe or early 80s. So how was Perm when you were in high school? I mean, you mentioned already earlier it was a little bit smaller, but
well, it was, and Kevin's probably correct in that analogy. I think over the years we've been fortunate with some of the larger manufacturers in town, Kenny Nelson and the companies that he's owned, and Arvig's, and we've got quite a few new ones now, but they were all able to grow and continue to flourish, and added employees, and that's probably maybe the difference between the size of Perm and maybe Frazee today.
Yeah, it's significant, but it's good. So you said you left to go to college in Grand Forks, but you came back. You have a business degree, I assume?
I do.
Okay, and you came back to run a bank, is that right?
Yes, at the time that would have been 1977. My grandfather was kind of retiring from the bank. Another longtime resident of a Perm, Bill Helmogarn, was about ready to retire, and there was an opportunity then, and the timing seemed right, so came back, and you know, I enjoy the lake life, the work at the bank. It seems like every day is a different day, dealing with you know, different people, different businesses, farmers, and everybody has a different story to tell, and we like to fine-tune our services and loans and deposit offerings to the variety of people, and kind of tailor our products for their needs.
Have you ever thought, growing up in a family that has a business, operates a bank, have you ever thought of following in the footsteps of your grandfather?
I guess I didn't at the time, but it's kind of played out that way, yeah.
So you did not foresee. I mean, you're an entrepreneur in a way, I guess.
And yeah,
is it
you
and your brother? Yeah. Is it you and your brother?
Yes, I have a brother that's in the bank now. We have another brother in between us that retired a few years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that start something from scratch. And then there's another entrepreneur that kind of follows a family tradition. So can you describe, like, the story? How did your grandfather come up with the idea of starting a bank in Lakes Country? He came from, did he resettle from Europe, from Ireland, or?
No, my father didn't. Actually, the bank ownership is on my mother's side. Her father's father, so great-grandfather to me, and his brothers owned some small banks, primarily up and down Highway 71 from Long Prairie, Gray Eagle, Clarissa, and that's actually where our bank came from back in. It was chartered in, I think, 1911, and during the Depression, there were two banks in Perm that failed, and they had the insight to see that Perm had more potential than Clarissa, so they moved the charter here, I think, in 1934, and continued banking in Perm since then.
So a bank is a big business, in my opinion, or like it is. So you don't just start a bank today anymore with all the regulation. And so how was that? So they were two brothers?
And they just... Three brothers, actually.
Three brothers, and they decided, let's handle, like, instead of cutting hair, they just handled deposits? How was a bank in 1934? How did it look like?
Well, it was probably a much simpler operation then, but nevertheless, the fundamentals were the same. You needed to put in some of your own money. Deposits from the deposits from your customers, along with your capital, would have been your assets. And then you essentially use that money to make loans to your customers. And obviously, a much smaller scale back then relative to everything being much cheaper, but the fundamentals, you know, pretty similar today.
Okay, so you have deposits, and then you're able to lend it out to a certain ratio, because you always have to have funds available or in the safe to give back if everybody came and wanted their money back, so you cannot lend out too much. Okay, I get all that. Interesting. So it was a deposit and a loan business back in the early stages.
Yes.
And nowadays, I think in the 80s, it got really, I don't know, maybe earlier, it got really trendy to do stocks or investments. But you did did your bank grow services?
We provide a lot more things today, obviously, than they did back then. Relative to our services, we provide a lot more of those today. And probably the big thing you were alluding to back starting in the 80s were, driven by the technology changes. Back in the days when I first started working, we filed checks by hand. People didn't have account numbers. You had to figure out whose account it was, maybe by the signature. And now, obviously, with you get your checks on your mobile device, you can look at your account, the checks, and all those sorts of things. So it's come, technology has brought us a long way relative to those kinds of things.
Okay, that also probably means that you only had a handful or like maybe a few hundred customers back in the day to be able to match all those checks and transactions. I did not know that there was not an accounting number system.
No, well, it was like this. If you went into a merchant in Perm or whatever and you were going to buy some groceries or whatever, and they were called counter checks, and they'd ask what bank you did business with, whether it was in Perm or Frazee or Detroit Lakes or Virgus or Dent or whatever, and they'd have a check blank behind the counter for any one of those banks. So you just would sign Dirk Arkhart, and when it got to your bank, they'd have to look at your signature and see, yep, this is a check that Dirk wrote. And if you had a half a dozen relatives that lived around here, you had to make sure that we got it to the right account. So
it's a payment. A check is actually a payment promise, correct? I'm supposed to have the funds in my account.
Correct.
And I promise whoever merchant I'm getting goods from to say like, hey, I will pay you off this order, these amounts of funds with my signature. Also back in the day,
That was before account numbers. So
interesting.
After that, when we got to doing things with machines and a little bit electronic, then you had an account number. So we were able to match the account number got read electronically. But it was hard to get people to get their arms around having an account number as opposed to just signing their name on a counter check.
When did that happen?
I would
80s?
Say early 70s, late 60s.
They had a hard time making it more safe and like...
the customer had a little difficulty
That's
understanding
what I meant.
It. Yeah. Why do I need this account number? You know who I am.
Fascinating. So yeah. Now we have like, speaking of technology, so 50 years ago or 40, almost 50 years ago, getting an account number assigned was a difficulty for the consumer. And now we have smartphones where technology is just racing and actually making things maybe fast, but I believe oftentimes also more safe. Speaking of safety, you can match, and the cousin does not actually pay you with your signature. So it is a safety thing. Speaking of safety, before we go deeper in technology, because I think it's really interesting, online banking and all those things, but do you have a funny story about a bank robbery? How often, or like, I don't know, I Wild West movies with a horse?
Fortunately, we have never had a robbery.
Okay, good.
Probably the most notorious one in the area took place over in Virgus at the Virgus State Bank. And
oh, really?
Yeah. They were not the most accomplished criminals in the world. I forget, they stole a car. If memory serves me, they stole the car a couple days before the robbery, and then they left the car running outside the bank where they're robbing the bank, and the rightful owner saw the car and I think got back in the car and took it back. So when they came out, they were without a getaway car. There might be a few errors in that, but I think that's kind of the gist of how it went. So yeah, it was quite a story.
And when was that? 60s?
I would say 70s, maybe. Yeah.
That is really funny. So how is the conversion with this internet that arrived since 96? Since when do you do online banking, for example?
We have probably had online banking for 15 years probably.
Okay, so fairly soon.
Yeah.
And this is probably was a huge investment or like a cost.
It was. And, you know, continuing to stay up with all the new advances with it is it's an ongoing thing. We strive to make sure that the security issues relative to all that data are covered. I mean, you hear about a lot of data breaches throughout the country. I think banking, being a highly regulated industry, we are held to a very high standard, and we endeavor to make sure that we are on top of that issue.
One thing that I noticed with all banks in the United States, in fact, is that it's enough to log in with a username and password, and then I can kind of freely bank. What I mean by that is bill pay or transactions. I guess here we don't have a really transaction infrastructure as in Europe, you know, with the IBAN and those SWIFT codes. We don't even have checks anymore for 20 years. I mean, we discarded the check 20 years ago. So there is no check. And we only wire transfer. And it's free, actually. All Europe is free of charge. What I mean, though, is we have PINs, and then we have a transaction code. So for each transaction that I want to enter, I have a sheet, which I have a six-digit code to enter for a matching transaction. And then I get a three-digit code back that the bank confirms that I used the right one. So it's like, it's not complicated, or is that too much, or like why is it okay if we just log in and then we don't have like a ton, like a transaction, like an additional signature? Can you see, have you heard of that at all?
No. I not really, but I think maybe, I mean, I'm certainly the Europeans have a good system. I think maybe where our security is on the backside that you maybe don't see from the customer standpoint.
Okay.
On those kinds of transactions.
Underwriting, so double checking. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, that makes sense.
And the demise of the check, you know, has been greatly debated over the years, and there's certainly less of it. But you know, in some of the smaller communities, there's still a significant clientele that still like to write out a check or still like to come in and deposit a check at the bank. So we cater to both.
Yeah, no, I understand, I guess. Why is it that, for example, I always go into banks and then it seems to me that a lot of even tellers, they don't know the routing number of the bank. So it's like always this, and I don't find the routing number on the website so clearly. Can you explain to me why in the United States, in general, it's not so common that we just wire, like, there's a routing number that is identifying the bank itself, and then there's an account number and an account holder. It should be fairly easy. Why is it that it's not so common? You know, is the infrastructure not there? Is the what is it called in Germany? It's the Zentralbank. It's the central banks. You know, like we have central banks all over, and then the banks always wire to the central bank, and they're communicating to the other bank. So it just happens magically, I guess.
Yeah.
Why is that not?
I'm not really sure why that goes. Our wiring is, we probably go through a correspondent bank.
Yeah,
we probably have we're probably a little more decentralized than Europe is relative to the banks that we do business with. For instance, rather than doing business with the Federal Reserve Bank, we do business with some other larger correspondent banks that's where our wires go through.
Yeah, is that history? Or like, it's interesting because the Fed, the German central bank, they manage the same. The Fed manages the US dollar. It's a note published by the government, so to say, or by the Fed, actually. Actually, the Fed is a unique institution, right?
It is. It's,
yeah.
It's a government, essentially the government's bank.
Correct? What is the government? Okay, because in Germany, the central bank is unique. So the government cannot tell the central bank to print euro. Like, and that's a difference in the United States, because the government can say, publish more money, right?
Well, they claim to have, you know, autonomy, and but I mean, they're essentially, it's a government. It's a government bank. Their profits at the end of the year essentially go into the U.S. budget.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So why is it though that we have, I think we have 9,000 banks in the United States. I just heard a figure coincidentally, something like that. And we have a lot of banks in the United States. Why is it, because you just said it, that they don't correspond with the Fed enough? And why isn't there like a highway system?
Well, I mean, there is. I think it's the difference is that we've continued to use the check. When you have a check, on the bottom of the check is the bank's routing number and then the person's individual account number, which is the information you'd need to initiate a wire. But we still find other means of, I mean, you can certainly use wires, but I think people still will use a check. And then obviously you have the electronic features that are available in mobile banking, using your phone or smart device for sending money as well.
Yeah, because the wire is actually just a reverse check. Or actually the check is the reverse wire, yeah. Right? Because of the same information is on that check that you're
correct.
Actually doing. You're
correct.
Pulling the money instead of pushing the money.
Correct.
So, and then I really, I don't know if it's a myth, but everybody says like, oh, I cannot give out my account number. It's like always like, oh, there's going to be fraud. But with each check, you're disclosing all of it. I mean, if you end
that,
up...
That is a bit of a misnomer, you're right. It's all your information is on a check.
So, anyways, okay. But that aside, how, just as a curiosity, so how, is that public? How many customers? Is it like 10,000, 20,000?
We have roughly 14,000 customers in various applications, checking, savings, CDs, loans, that sort of thing.
And they have 3 locations?
We have a location here in Perms, our main branch, one in Dent, one in Frazee, and one out in Central Market. Yeah,
oh.
Perm and the grocery store here.
Oh, right. Yeah, so you have one little satellite in Perm, so you have 2 in Perm. Okay. 14,000. So how many employees do we need? Is it like 150?
No, we have probably 60 full-time employees, and then we have some students that we rotate through more in the summer and some year-round as well.
Okay. So what is it, what does it make unique? I mean, we are Lakes Country. Do you feel like running a business in Lakes Country, and especially a bank, and 60 people, I mean, it's a big business. Your balance sheet is probably... With 14,000 clients, it's a big company. What does it make it special or unique? Just personal, because you said I never really thought I would follow in the family business, but you did now. Can you describe how that feels, or what does it make it?
Well, I said before, the unique part of it, I guess, is that every day is a different day. Certainly, we have the lakes area is unique, and that we have the lakes and all the recreational opportunities to go with those, which is certainly a big part of our economy here for everybody, our bank included. You know, in addition to that, we have agriculture that we serve, and we have a very strong manufacturing commercial business in Perm. So, I mean, we've referred to it as a three-legged stool in Perm between tourism and agriculture and then the manufacturing we have. So it's a very unique blend. They all have different needs from time to time relative to what the economy is doing. So it's fun. You never know what the day is gonna bring when you walk through the door in the morning.
That's okay. That's good. Another question, because you have that on your fingertips, maybe of access, like a little market research over, and you're probably with the bank for 30 years already.
77, yeah. 33, I guess.
40.
Yeah,
40, yeah. Yep. Almost 41.
Yeah.
77, holy buckets. I was born in 78, so I wasn't even there when you started to be a banker. What do you think has, since we know it has grown, but maybe in the past 10 years even, past 5, people that come to you as a customer, do you see a lot of relocates from the cities, or do you know... What I mean is, I try to find out who's moving to Lakes Country, or like, you think they came a little bit just from the outside and moved rural into city? Do you see people coming from out of state, Fargo? Do they come to retire? Or I guess there's a lot of new employees for those manufacturing places and such. Can you give me a little insight what your feeling is, where those people all came from? Maybe.
Well, we certainly have the employment opportunities that are provided for in Perham, so that's a source of the influx. In addition to that, I think Perham and the Lakes area in general provide a attractive spot for people to retire to and come to, and a lot of people maybe buy a cabin or something on a lake, you know, 8-10 years in advance of retirement, so that they're here and can make it a full-time place when they ultimately retire. So I think the area has a lot of that. I think I read something where Otter Tail County is, you know, poised for a lot of growth in that regard.
Yeah, but I have a feeling, I think I notice a lot of young families coming, not just the retirees, because 5 years ago when I came first, I really also thought it's this right retirement haven, yeah, or heaven or whatever. It's like everybody wants to retire at the lake, but I think there's also way more young people starting their family here. And I mean, maybe another proof of that is that we just put a $40 million new high school up. I think that is also looking into the future, right? I mean, if you plan.
Very much so. Yeah, we have a large influx of those people, and I think that's you know, part of the opportunity that there is here for the businesses and the commercial things we have going on here.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a significant increase in enrollment at the school at the lower levels, so they'll have increasing student populations as we go through time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's a fascinating spot. I personally feel there's going to be like a renaissance of small town living in America. I don't think I'm the only one saying that. I read it now somewhere else too, but like I am actually from a big city, but the Minneapolis area, I don't connect to it anymore too much after I've been experiencing this. So I think we're going to have more people arriving, even forthgoing, in the next 5-10 years.
I hope you're right, and I certainly would agree with you. You know, I enjoy going down to Minneapolis for a bit, but the morning commute or the evening commute for 45 minutes in the traffic we can be out on the lake or out on the golf course a lot more than they can down there.
I know. So this is this work-life balance. Here we have a beautiful work-life balance, I find. And speaking of that, can you describe what does the perfect lake life weekend look like to Charlie? Like, what do you do?
Well, it would maybe be an early Saturday morning playing golf, and then maybe spending a little time on a lake later on in the day, and maybe the same thing again the next day.
And what's your handicap?
2.
Really?
So I have spent a little time out there, yeah.
You must have a lot of time lately. No, that's really good. Gosh, I am shy of asking you to play sometime.
Well, we'll have to play.
The good thing about golf is a strong player can play with a weak player, right?
Absolutely. It's a great game at all, you know, at all skill levels, and you kind of challenge yourself. If you normally shoot 90 and you shoot 85, you feel like you've...
a rock star.
You feel good about it.
I know.
If you normally shoot 75 and you shoot 73, you feel good about that. So
yeah, I love that sport. Yeah. I love it. And then on the lake, are you a floater, swimmer? Do you boat?
Boat mostly around here, yes.
Yeah. Do you ski?
I used to water ski. I haven't done that for a while, but okay. I'd like to think I still could, but I might not hold myself to proving that either. But we used to water ski a lot as kids growing up.
Have you seen the wake surfing?
I do. That seems to be more popular than water skiing. Watching out on the lake, you see a lot more wakeboarding than you do water skiing nowadays.
I know. Wakeboarding is pulled behind. And I actually just did it 2 weeks ago, wake surfing, where you, without the cord. And I'm not a skier, and skiing is, I can't really get up. I don't know why. But the surfing is really easy, and it's so slow. So I'm totally thrilled. So maybe something you want to... I can show you that. You show me a good golf game, and I show you a wake surf.
That looks about my speed nowadays, too.
Yeah, it's really slow. It's like 10, 11 miles per hour, and you just kind of float. It's amazing, yeah. So I'm totally hooked with that now. But, well, anything you wanted to share beyond?
No, we just, you know, we appreciate the opportunity to be on, and your business here, and that promotes the lake area. We're we're glad to be your neighbor across the street, and appreciate all the enthusiasm you garner for the Lakes area.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure to have you. You have a wonderful weekend ahead.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.